Welcome to the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast. This is one of our refinable episodes, a personal portrait of a gospel-shaped life. It's our deep hope that God would speak to you through these life stories and faith journeys, and that these narratives would encourage and inspire you to follow Christ in deeper and intentional ways, especially in regards to how the gospel can shape and, in some cases, reshape a person's life. Today's guest, a follower of Christ, a husband, a father of two, a pastor, a church planter, a networking pro, a fan of shoes and comics, and a coffee lover and connoisseur. None of this Starbucks business. He's also one of the founders and main hosts of the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast, the recently ordained Reverend Bernard Tam, an amazing brother in Christ and a fantastic friend. How is it going?
Good. How's it going?
This is exciting. I'm excited to get to hear about your testimony and a little bit about your life. All right, we're going to just jump right in to our big five. So, question number one, how has the gospel personally shaped and worked in your life?
The gospel in my life, perhaps maybe a painting on my wall would kind of help shape what the gospel means in my life. So in our house, right beside the dining room table, is a replica picture of Rembrandt's Prodigal Son.
Yeah.
And that has been a huge story of the gospel narrative of how God redeems, God's mercy and love, embracing someone who is lost and far from him. And I think that's kind of my own personal journey with experiencing the gospel. For many who know me, I grew up Catholic, very Catholic. I was an altar boy. I was an award-winning altar boy.
Ooh.
Not that it really means much, but I grew up with all the religious know-hows and the knowledge, and you know, like I was voted in grade 8 most likely to become a priest. And I guess I did live that path, but it wasn't until when my dad passed away and just all of faith and belief was put into question. But this painting, the story of the prodigal, was that which brought me back. And I believe that that's one of the most powerful impact of the gospel. That no matter how far, no matter how broken, difficult, and just lost we are, God is there.
Yeah.
And he embraces and he redeems and he is making new.
Awesome. That's a beautiful story. How has the gospel shaped and worked in your life, in your family? And you could talk about your marriage or as a parent or maybe even as a son. It's up to you.
Yeah, that's a lot of different areas. I think for my wife and I, Susan and I, we've continually wrestled with what it means to let God lead in our home. We struggle and wrestle with, you know, what this prayer life look like, especially now we have two kids. Rhythm is very, very different. You know, you're thinking about the awake time, the sleep time, the nap time, the feed time, the drop-off time, the pickup time. But we also want to recognize that the gospel shapes us to be witnesses in our community. So we want to recognize that our kids are along with us on this gospel narrative in our neighborhood. And so we wrestle, we struggle. You know, we're church planting in the city of Toronto. So we need to let the gospel narrative to help us imagine what life together looks like. And it's funny, you talk about, you know, like, well, how does the gospel impact your family? I remember when I was in seminary and with my mom, like my mom was in seminary too. We were in some of the classes together. Don't ask who did better. Let's just put it this way. She's doing her PhD now and I'm not.
But you are an award-winning altar boy. So I don't know.
I remember we actually had some crazy dinner conversations. Like whatever we were learning in seminary would be brought back to our meal times. And I think that's something that I hope that we would continue as a family too. May not be like in that depth in a high theological format, but for the kids to experience like, yeah, you know, like our family meal time would be a part of the gospel unfolding.
That's so cool.
At least that's what we're aspiring. Right now, it's a little hard because with the four-year-old, it's more like, I don't know.
How has the gospel of Jesus shaped your vocation as a pastor, as a church planter?
The gospel is the center. To be, you know, a missionary in the city, you got to recognize that the good news gives context
right
to God's unfolding narrative here. It may not be, you know, the traditional view of the gospel of, like, you know, we're sinners and we're in need of Jesus, and let's pray this prayer and, you know, we have access to heaven. And that's part of the good news. But good news also is such a vibrant context of the lordship of Jesus and his unfolding kingdom, this counterculture in our own neighborhood. And that is the challenge of being a pastor, a missionary, a church planter here in the city, to see the good news in its specific context and spaces unfolding in the lives of people.
Awesome. So, question number two, how would you define and describe the process of discipleship? And has it changed over the years?
I don't know if it has really changed over the years. I think I often found it hard to pinpoint what discipleship pathways look like.
Right.
I don't think that there is like I think they're markers of spiritual maturity, but I don't know if there's like...
It's not formulaic.
Yeah, it's not like four-step process to becoming a disciple. But it's a lot of journeying alongside. It's a lot of wrestling and experience together. It's about, like, for me, it's always been like a lifestyle discipleship where people are journeying together. That discipleship is learning about the truth of God, you know, through scripture practices, but also like implementing it on a daily life, but doing it in community together.
Sure.
And also, like, part of discipleship is missions.
Sure.
Like to actually let the truth of God compel us to live a lifestyle that radiates the aroma of Jesus around us.
Hmm.
And so I think that's kind of the process of discipleship.
Yeah. How has that looked like for you going through the different stages of life? Because you were single at one point and then married, and then you were a parent and you were a pastor at a church one time, and now you are doing church planting and a pastor in a different context, in a different community. So how has it kind of looked for you personally through these different stages?
I find that discipleship in when I was part of an organized church, like with a building, we had like a couple hundred people, there was certain structures that were in place that kind of helped facilitate certain areas of discipleship.
All right.
Especially the learning part, you know, having Sunday school, and then you kind of have the expression.
Good old Sunday school.
Yeah, like 9:30 Sunday school. That was what we had. And you know, through Sunday school and fellowships and small groups, like those become, you know, part of the discipleship process.
Right.
But I think when we went into church planting, it just felt like some of those may not be applicable in this season of the church, because we're a small church of 20 people. And I think we're still kind of trying to figure out what that discipleship process kind of looks like.
Right.
It's definitely different through different seasons as well. It's interesting. I had a conversation over Facebook about a post that Francis Chan has posted about missions.
Oh, okay.
And how he has said, like, it grieves him that families don't go on missions anymore. The zeal that they once had as young adults for mission.
Yeah. I think I read that too. Yeah,
kind of no longer there. And then I saw, you know, some of the folks kind of commenting on that. It's like, oh, like, yeah, you know, this is really true. Like, we've idolized a family. And I think he is right, and he is bang on, that there is an idolatry of family. But I think at the same time, we also have to recognize that that being on mission is part of being a disciple.
Sure.
And part of the discipleship process. But oftentimes is usually, you know, then go on mission, go do some stuff.
Right. Go overseas.
Right. Or you know, like just do some inner city missions or something like that.
Yeah.
But then I think for churches and for leaders, perhaps what we need to consider is how do we learn to listen to God and discern his will in the different rhythms of life. And, you know, even as a family with kids, like your rhythm is so different from a young adult. You can't anticipate that you can have all the energy in the world and all the time in the world because, you know, you have these dependent little ones that are in your life. And mission's going to look different. It's going to reflect differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and that's why it's kind of hard to kind of pinpoint because it's so specific and contextual depending on life stage and situations and even neighborhoods.
Because
there's a place to discipleship and mission, so...
Yeah, and I love what you said. I think it's that's a lot of wisdom right there when you said discerning what God is doing in your current rhythm of life, and to be open to see, are there new ways in which we can not only be on mission but grow as a disciple in this new season.
Yeah, I think part of it for me in this season is not so much learning like what mission kind of looks like or discipleship kind of looks like. I think when we learn to hear God, that is probably one of the most important part of being a disciple. Because if we can't hear him, how are we to respond?
Sure.
How are we to live? Right? He is the one that directs us, not our impulses or our own ideologies.
That's awesome. That is super awesome. So our podcast, the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast, we do talk a lot about what is the mission of God. And if you guys want to hear more about Bernard's understanding and his growing perspective of that, check out our second main episode. But personally, for you, how do you believe you have been called to be part of the mission of God?
I think I will go back to a couple years ago when God has called us out as a family from my previous church. And it was a season of discernment and prayer and trying to figure out, God, like, where are you leading us? You know, it's kind of that Genesis 12 Abrahamic call when we left our church. I remember telling our leaders and elders, yeah, God's called us, but we don't know where. But I really sense that God's called us.
Just like Abraham, too.
Yeah, I know.
Did not know it's where, like, he's
just
going.
Just kind of follow me. I'll show you to the promised land. Okay. I think over the years, I began to... And I'm still trying to figure out like what that specific role is in God's kind of missional plans. But I find that my passion is to journey with others and to be inspirer,
yeah,
if there's such a word, for others to see God's great mission.
Sure.
I don't think, you know, like it's... I think my giftings is more in the apostolic kind of equipping side, where I'm inspiring and challenging people. Like, I'm always trying to find something new, not because, like, you know, I get bored. Well, maybe that's part of it too. but I'm excited that God is someone who's doing something awesome all the time. And I want to see people who are capturing that same imagination and seeing that, you know, God's narrative invites them to be a part of something new. And I think that's, you know, like you said, I was a networker, and that's, I think, part of the reason why I love to network, because I can be a part of this beautiful gospel narrative unfolding.
Sure.
And I can see, you know, some of the connections and linkage of how, you know, God may be bringing different people along in different, you know, areas across the city. And I think that that's where that missional vocational calling is. I also love to just be in third spaces and recognize, like, you know, there's a space where we have often separated between the secular and sacred that I think God is using and utilizing that more and more. Where when we are regularly in present there, we bear the very presence of Christ.
Sure.
So for me, a lot of the coffee shops are, you know, these sacred secular spaces that I believe, you know, God is doing something in the relationships that are formed, and just to, you know, be present and available in the neighborhood.
Sure. And I think I've always been encouraged by the way that you and your family have trusted God, even to the point where He has led you into this area, the Midtown area, and you guys decide to uproot from your area up in North York and decide, hey, you know, we're going to follow where God leads us and trust that He's going to provide a place, because we want to be His reflection, His incarnational presence in the neighborhood. And like to hear stories from you about how you connect with families, attending birthday parties, and I was like, wow, that's so awesome, about such a cool way of being on God's mission. What would you say are some of the greatest joys in walking with God?
I mean, the greatest joy of walking with God is probably just to know Him.
Yeah.
Personally, you know, as I look at ministry and in life, like I find that what brings me the greatest joys is just always being in awe of how God works. I feel like often we're not in awe enough to recognize that God is God is amazing and how intricate and how he forms his church and his community, and it becomes larger, and it, and you just, you know, like for one example, I had kind of share a little bit in our podcast, I think, about this church, this little Anglican church downtown in Chinatown, and how, you know, now they meet in a tea shop. And, you know, I just had the opportunity to be like, hey, I met this Christian guy that's opened up a tea shop downtown in Chinatown. And then I met somebody else who's doing, you know, like graduate work ministry at the university, and just like, hey, you guys should connect.
That's so rad.
Right. And then they just kind of, you know, met and then became friends. And then they started a service there, you know. So there's an Anglican church in a Chinese tea shop on a Sunday morning. Like, it's kind of crazy.
Hey, God works in mysterious ways. He brings people together like that.
Yeah. So like, it's just incredible kind of how God works.
Sure. What have been some of the hardest and challenging moments in your life and faith?
Some of the hardest moments are wrestling with a deeper desire. I remember being in a rut for a very long time with this sense of like discontent and wanting more, like out of church, out of ministry, out of like this relationship with God. And I think those are probably some of the hardest times, because I'm not sure how to get there, but I know I wanted more. And I know part of the whole journey to church planting was out of this kind of discontent. Sure. Not that I wasn't, you know, like my previous church was vibrant. It was growing. It was like one of the few churches that had a huge and vibrant young adult ministry for a Chinese church. But then there was something more. There's something that, like, you know, I just couldn't articulate at that time. And I think those are moments where I just feel very dark, because I'm like, I don't know how to explain it to people. Nobody really understands, but it's just this kind of like holy discontent.
Sure.
But then at the same time, like, even though it's difficult, like, I felt like God was guiding and God was leading, but I also needed to kind of surrender to him. And I think in my own journey, the act of surrender is very challenging, because it means that I got to utterly and completely trust that God is fully in control. And there has been many moments of that I've learned through the years. Even the whole coffee shop thing where, you know, like, I've been dreaming about this for years, but there was this moment where I just needed to kind of like lay it at the altar and just say, you know, God, like, you've given me these passions, but I think I've set it as idols. And so I need to give it to you.
Wow.
And it is in those moments that kind of God redeems it and helps me see the reason and the purpose behind why these passions are there.
It's kind of like the crucible of ministry and also dreams.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, intense. All right, those were our big five questions. Now a couple questions just for you, Bernard. How have you seen church planting in light of the mission of God?
Church planting, it is a big part of the mission of God.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the advancement and the growing of churches in some of the most needed areas. What I've found, though, is I'm speaking in the context of the city of Toronto. I am church planting in Toronto. Mm-hmm. I think we need to church plant in the city. I think a lot of church plants have moved to the suburbs.
Out of the city.
Yeah, but we need more unique, contextualized church plants in the city. You know, I was just talking to some of my friends in the denomination. Like, we have very few church plants in the city of Toronto, like in the 416.
Right.
You know, the density-wise, like, it's just ballooning in the city. Like, in my neighborhood, like, right now, John and I are meeting, right at Yonge and Eglinton. Like,
literally. Right in the city.
Yeah, right in the center core. And here, you know, we're anticipating 10,000 people in the next couple of years moving into this neighborhood.
Wow, 10,000 people?
I think so, because there's so many buildings, like, right across.
All the condos and everything, yeah.
Yeah, there's two 55-story condos building just in the corner of here.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, just those buildings alone, you know, it's got to be like thousands of people.
Sure.
Right? And in the density of the city like this, like, we don't have that many witnesses and presence. So I think the years of learning about church planting and being a part of like what God is unfolding in the city, like we need more work in the city as much as we do, you know, like overseas and whatnot. Like even in our work here, like we see, we have part of our church, we have this ministry to overseas students, you know, and we often talk about the 1040 window. But here in these English conversation classes is the 1040 window.
They're coming here.
Right. So it's like if we open our eyes and our heart, we actually see God's mission unfolding right here in our own city. And I think God is bringing us to participate in that.
Sure. What are some of the advantages and opportunities you've personally seen in church planting?
One of the things that are advantage of church planting is you get to reimagine church.
Mm.
You get to learn from traditions, but you get to contextualize and see, so what can church look like in a neighborhood like this? For our church, when I first started here, we've been doing Sunday gatherings. And there's nothing wrong with Sunday gatherings. I think this is still what church means for many. But if we were another church in this neighborhood that's trying to do another Sunday morning thing, like, is that the most effective way to engage with our neighbors?
Right.
Or, you know, can we explore ways of, you know, doing church at home, doing church focus on a meal? You know, like, can it be dressed down, you know, like, and not to say that, like, you know, we want to secularize the sacred, but it's just learning to see, you know, kind of how God can impact and break through into the spheres and the spaces.
Sure.
And, you know, if we really believe that church is the people, then it's where the people gather, that's where the church is.
Right.
And it doesn't necessitate it to look a certain way. And I think that's been both a challenge and a joy of church planting, because it's hard to imagine outside of that. We have, you know, like thousands of years of history of what church looks like.
Sure.
And for us to kind of break the mold and to reimagine, it's not that easy.
Hmm.
But I believe in kind of what Neil Cole wrote in Church 3.0, that we are entering into a new season of church. That this kind of in his words, the Constantinian church that has shaped our ideology for all these years, which he would classify as Church 2.0, is now changing. We're entering into this post-Christian world where, you know, more and more people have some understanding of Christianity, but not this, you know, church is Sundays and whatnot. And that really pushes Christianity to not be relevant, but to be contextual, to be something that is tangibly worthwhile in its neighborhood, and something that is unique, where, you know, like the church of Midtown is different from the church of Leslieville, it's different from the church of Scarborough, and even within Scarborough, like with different neighborhoods and the people that are there and the rhythm that's happening. And that gives space for church planting, because a lot of times when we're part of traditional churches or churches that has been really established, there's history, there's tradition. To change that, it's going to take a lot of time, because there's already a pulse and a rhythm. Plus, you got a building that you got to upkeep. And so there's a lot of factors that come into play. And, you know, like, I can't imagine, you know, all the hard work that goes into that. But then with the church plan, if you're renting space, if you don't have space, which is, you know, kind of interesting too, like you have to be creative. So, you know, for one example, this Christmas we had a baptism, and, you know, we had a baptism, I think it was Christmas Eve. So it was almost impossible to find another church to borrow a baptismal tank. You don't want to do baptism outside on December 24th.
It's pretty cold.
Yeah, not in Toronto, at least. So we actually went to somebody's condo pool, and we baptized there.
Ooh.
So, you know, it really stirs people to kind of reimagine and rethink and find ways that we can, you know, live this out.
Sure. What are some of the challenges? I know you alluded to a few of them, but what are some of the main challenges you've seen in church planting?
some of the challenges of church planting. I mean, one of the big ones is resources.
Mm-hmm.
To launch a church plant is a lot of work, and you need a lot of resources. You need a lot of finances. You need a lot of people support. You need, you know, even just equipment and all that stuff. Like, you're starting from scratch. So you need that. But what I found also with many church planters is it's a very lonely journey.
Right.
Because usually the church planters that I've met, they think outside of the box. So they're not your typical pastor.
Right.
Because they're more like spiritual entrepreneurs in some ways. And they don't necessarily fit in some pastoral fellowships. And it becomes difficult and lonely on the journey. And especially, you know, like in our city, and in many Western cities, like, it's not the traditional matrix of success, right? It's not always, you know, like, you don't like explode and become 1,000 people church overnight. And I mean, there are those.
It's happened.
It's happening. And I believe
those are the exceptions.
Right. But when you're doing the hard work of engaging with people and you're entering into people's lives and you're just being present there, you're there at their funerals and you're there at the birthday parties, you're there present, it takes a long time. And when you're church planting, you're trying to explain people that these are the successes and not like, you know, how many people are there on a Sunday morning, how many baptism you've done, because like it takes a long road of discipleship before someone, you know, enters into that phase. It may be that we're just breaking the concrete. We haven't even been able to, you know, sow the seeds yet, because we're just breaking the concrete.
Right.
And so, you know, I've seen many people left because of how difficult it can get and how lonely it gets. And I think those are some of the big challenges of church planting.
Sure. Just to follow up on that, has it been difficult for people to catch a new vision of what the church can be?
I think some people have. Because I think we, like I said, a lot of people still have a certain perception and ideology of church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to shake. It's really hard to just imagine a different way of church.
Yeah, break out of that church is Sundays.
Right.
Mode. Yeah.
Yeah. And even the languages that we use, right? We say, let's go to church, you know, like, let's go to the church service. But, you know, we talk a lot about church being the body and the people. But if we always refer it as a place that we go to.
Or an event.
Then we aren't really, you know, allowing that fresh perspective to shape, right? And I think that is quite difficult.
Hmm.
You know, we joke, you know, John and I and a couple other pastors, we were part of this group that actually probably that's the group that gave birth to our other podcasts.
Yeah, that's right. The main podcast.
Yeah, as we wrestle with, you know, like why mission, right? What, how mission?
Yeah.
And we talk about this, you know, this idea of undiscipleship. That people need to be undiscipled of certain things so that they can clearly be discipled again.
Sure.
That is part of the process. And this, like, not everything is bad, but it's kind of having a fresh insight into what shapes a disciple.
Mm.
And then allowing God to kind of renew and refresh that so that we are best suited to be on mission and learning a life of discipleship together.
Mm-hmm. How would you say the person and work of Jesus has shaped the way you have approached leadership? Because there's a lot of different perspectives and models what a leader should be. But, you know, personally for you, how has Jesus shaped your understanding of leadership?
I think Jesus's way of leading, and, you know, even as I reflected on scripture, it's the posture of humility and servanthood that always inspires me as a leader.
Sure.
in the church, or a larger church. That I'm not here for my own fame. Like, Jesus wasn't there for his own fame. You know, he was God himself.
Right.
He was the Lord of the army of angels. And yet, he humbled himself to the point of being human, who humbled even more and died on the cross. And so how much more for us you know, leaders within the Christian community, that we need to emulate that. A servanthood of humility, of submission, even though, you know, like we also have certain authority, but it's not, you know, like we're not lording it over people, because we are also people under the submission of Christ. Mm. One of the most challenging things that I think for Christian leaders is, you know, found in Ephesians 5, like this idea of mutual submission. And that's been something that it's been really on my heart. Well, how do we learn to mutually submit to each other? As Jesus submitted to the Father, right? Like he practiced mutual submission. And I think for leaders, and especially for me, what I've been learning is, you know, how do I lead out of a posture of submission?
Right.
Because recognizing that, you know, God's Spirit is at work in community. And so even though, like, you know, I carry a certain title, like I don't want that title to shape who I am, but that I am also a servant.
It definitely is an approach that is not taken by a lot, because I think, you know, whether we'd like to admit it or not, a lot of models of leadership have been taken from other sources, mm-hmm. like being an entrepreneur or being a CEO or being, you know, a business owner, right? Like, and some people will argue, like, oh, how do we get things done if we always are just submitting to each other and we're not getting the results we want,
right,
and such. But I think there's a lot to be wrestled with. What you were just sharing about is revolutionary.
It's kind of, you know, as you were talking about the different models like CEOs and whatnot, I remember Tony Campolo kind of talking about this a couple of years back when I heard him at a youth conference, and how he said, Jesus never wielded his power. He wielded his authority.
Mm.
And power comes with coercion, but authority kind of comes with relations.
Mm, that's good.
And that's something that I really took to heart, because I don't lean because I have the title of pastor. I lean because I love the people and I care for God's work and God's people. I think that is an important posture for leadership, especially because the church needs to be a countercultural, a kingdom culture for the world. We can't lead like the world. It needs to lead differently.
Mm, that's gold right there. Last question for you. How can coffee and coffee shop culture be a landscape for missional engagement?
It can absolutely be a perfect landscape for missions. I'd chronicle my journey with coffee and missions, actually. I can, can kind of learn the sophistication of both. Because I started out just drinking Tim Hortons coffee and hanging out at Tim Hortons, because I find it very fascinating that a lot of people hang out there.
Sure.
I actually did my first Bible study prep at a Tim Hortons when I was a young Christian, and we were doing a Bible study there and we were prepping and whatnot. We were struggling with this one verse from Romans, and I was just fascinated. Like, you know, this is such a unique space that people kind of do all kinds of stuff, right? Like,
right.
It was actually the Tim Hortons at a... in Scarborough, North Scarborough, where there's actually a lot of Chinese workers waiting for jobs. And literally, like, a truck would come by and then they would just kind of hop on to their next job.
Whoa.
So it's that kind of environment. And then, you know, as I kind of wrestle more with, like, missions and what does it mean to be, like, locally engaged and being a present, like, I actually started going to Starbucks, because it was Starbucks that opened up, and beginning to enter into the lives of the baristas and, you know, journeying with them and whatnot. And then now, like, going to these third wave coffee shops and hipster coffee shops and whatnot. Like, that's also been more of my reflections of, you know, church, recognizing that there is a unique identity to every neighborhood. And that kind of shapes that neighborhood. And so actually, you know, back to, John, your question of, like, how does coffee shop engage with mission or kind of shapes the landscape of mission? What I love about coffee shop is that these are third spaces that blurs the line of sacred and secular.
Hmm.
That's
so cool.
Yeah. So these are spaces that I find that you can be as spiritual as you want or as unspiritual as you want. But you can create that opportunity. You know, as I reflect on coffee shops, I always land back on John chapter 4, with the Samaritan woman and Jesus meeting her there, and how like that was one of the earliest meeting points for a lot of people is around the well. They talk, they share life, they gossip, right? It's where a simple conversation can lead to a divine appointment. For the Samaritan woman, she would have never thought that she's going to meet a Jewish rabbi at a well who is willing to talk to her, who speaks into her life and brings her aware of the Messiah.
Yeah, that would have been scandalous.
Yeah, it's crazy. It is scandalous.
It is scandalous.
But I think that still happens today. I think coffee shops give us spaces where it's casual enough, but it's also formal enough. But it's a space where people can have their guards down in a way where honest truth and relationship can form.
Hmm. I love that in culture, it's already ingrained. Like you go, it's like, let's grab a coffee and go hang out at a coffee shop and chat and share life with each other.
And, you know, when you become a regular at the coffee shop, you begin to realize that there's an entire culture that is already there.
Mm.
You know, like that the baristas are there and they know you by name. They know your drink. They know your life story. And you kind of know theirs. Like it's almost like natural.
Hmm.
I think in many ways, people are also looking for a place to belong, a place that they call home. You know, this show called Cheers.
Yeah.
Years ago, like everybody knows your name. Like everybody's looking for a place like that.
Right.
And a coffee shop can't be that place.
I wondered if those people ever went home. They're always at Cheers. They're always at the bar.
I know. It's kind of crazy. But that's, I think, where missions can happen.
Right.
When we are present and intentional and regular in a place like a coffee shop, like God will open up conversations. God will create spaces where we can enter into the lives of people. You know, for me, like I always wanted to open up a coffee shop.
Yeah.
Because you also have a different vantage point and access point. Because if you're a regular, like you're a regular, well, it's one thing, but if you're their barista and they trust you, like you can really journey with a lot of people through the ups and downs.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I see missions and coffee shop.
Wow. A super cool opportunity that God leads us to, for sure. All right. To finish off our interview, we're going to ask Bernard a series of quick questions. The goal is to respond with just the first answer that pops into your head. Just the answer, no explanation needed. Are you ready?
All right.
Okay, here we go. Best place to grab a coffee in the GTA?
The Mello.
Bagel or croissant?
Croissant.
Window or aisle seat?
Aisle.
Best place to visit in the world?
Santorini.
What's your earliest memory?
Chocolate milk in Sydney Zoo.
Ooh. What's your favorite thing about where you live right now?
Coffee.
What inspires you?
Stories.
How would you spend $10?
Coffee.
I hear a theme here. All right. Favorite meal?
Breakfast.
Most interesting place to people watch?
I don't know, at the mall?
What's the most Canadian thing about you?
Coffee.
What's the most Asian thing about you?
Chopsticks.
Favorite place to be alone?
Shower.
What's the third thing you did when you woke up this morning?
I think I was making breakfast.
What's something new you learned within the last week?
Beekeeping.
If you had a superhero power, what would it be?
Super speed.
What is something you couldn't live without?
Coffee. Actually, my wife. But
what is something you could live without?
A car.
What's the last thing you Googled or searched on the internet?
I think wrestling.
What day in your life would you like to relive?
Probably the days with my dad.
What's your favorite fictional character?
Batman?
If your teenage self saw you today, what would he think?
Probably not much.
What do you think he would be most impressed with?
That I'm wearing Blundstones.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Bernard, for the interview. You guys have been listening to the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast. Definitely comment and give us your feedback on our Facebook page or on Twitter or by email. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know how we could be doing this show better. remember to subscribe and review and rate the show. We'll see you guys next time.